Welcome, everyone, to the March IASB podcast, where we bring you the latest insights from our board meetings. I am Neely Shaw, the Executive Technical Director at the IASB. And as always, in this episode, I am joined by my bosses, Andreas Barca, the Chair of the IASB, and Linda Mazan-Hutter, the Vice Chair. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Neely.
Thanks a lot, Neely.
Well, thank you for joining us. We have 10 projects that were discussed in the March board meeting. It was a very long and intense week, but perhaps happily for our listeners, we will only be doing a deep dive into three of those projects. And those are one, climate-related and other uncertainties in the financial statements, two, management commentary, and three, power purchase agreements. So before we start into the details, just wanted to update you that there will be a change in the dates for our December board meeting. Initially, it was scheduled for the week commencing the 16th of December, but we have now moved it 1 week earlier. So it will start on the 9th of December. So please do make a note of that in your calendars. So let's move on to the first project we were planning to discuss today, which is, as I mentioned, our project on climate-related and other uncertainties in the financial statements. Many of you might recall that the board added this project to its work plan in 2023, and it arose from the board's third agenda consultation, where stakeholders had pointed out that information about climate-related risks in the financial statements is sometimes insufficient or inconsistent with other information provided by an entity. So the objective of this project is to explore targeted actions. I want to be clear, targeted actions to improve the reporting of climate-related and other uncertainties in the financial statements. And what we mean by that, by targeted, is that we're not looking to redo the conceptual framework. We're not looking to redo the role of or redo the purpose of financial statements. It's really looking at possible narrow scope improvements. So in September 2023, the IASB decided to explore a portfolio of actions to help achieve this objective. And those actions are in response to feedback that our accounting standards may not use the word climate, but the principles are generally sufficient to account for climate-related risks. Really, what stakeholders are looking for is some help with the application of our accounting standards. And that the application challenges are not unique to climate-related uncertainties, but uncertainties generally, be it pandemics, geopolitical uncertainties, biodiversity, and so forth. And so in September, the board had decided to explore actions related to the possible development of examples that would illustrate how to apply the standards, possibly doing some standard setting to improve disclosures about estimates, assumptions, and judgments, and publishing an article about the role of financial statements and the power that we have when it's complemented by sustainability-related financial disclosures, such as those made applying ISSB standards. So with that background, Andreas, can I turn things over to you to share the highlights of the March board meeting?
Of course, Neely. And maybe I start by just framing it, saying that we had a discussion at the meeting. It wasn't a decision-making meeting. So we were educated and educating ourselves. The staff presented 8 examples illustrating how to apply IFRS disclosure requirements to report the effects of climate-related and other uncertainties in financial statements. And I think it's fair to say underpinning these examples is careful consideration about our favorite C word, connectivity, with our sister board, the ISSB. But I know that is near and dear to Linda's heart. I don't want to steal your thunder, so maybe you can share some perspectives in a few minutes.
Absolutely happy to do that, Andreas.
Great to hear. So in developing the examples, our staff consult with all groups of stakeholders, including standard setters, preparers, investors, and accounting firms. Through this collaborative process, the staff identified 3 main areas to address in the examples. First, materiality judgments. Second, assumptions and other sources of estimation uncertainty. And third, aggregation and disaggregation. The examples themselves do not add or change to the requirements in IFRS accounting standards. The staff also explored what would be the most helpful vehicle for communicating the examples to stakeholders. They identified, again, 3 possible options, being the first option to present the examples as educational materials outside of IFRS accounting standards. Second option being to include illustrative examples accompanying IFRS accounting standards. And the third one, to incorporate the examples into IFRS accounting standards. The staff view was that including the examples as illustrative examples accompanying the standards would offer the best balance between accessibility, enforceability, consultation, and flexibility in content and format. I think it's important to note that the examples we are discussing primarily illustrate how to apply IFRS disclosure requirements and consider recognition and measurement requirements only to a very limited extent. This is because the concerns raised about insufficient information and the application challenges identified relate mostly to the application of disclosure requirements and IFRS accounting standards. The main concerns related to recognition and measurement requirements have already been considered or being addressed in other actions taken as part of this project or other ISB projects.
So, Andreas, going back to your point on connectivity, this project exemplifies what we mean by connectivity in a number of ways. First, the ultimate goal of connectivity is that information in financial reports is connected, meaning that it tells a holistic, comprehensive, and coherent story. This project is intended to help with that because one of the concerns we are trying to address with this project, as Neely mentioned, is perceived inconsistencies in disclosures. These perceived inconsistencies arise because sometimes there is lots of disclosure about climate-related risks and opportunities in the so-called front half of the annual reports, but not much or any mention in the financial statements or what we call the back half. In developing the examples, the staff sought to illustrate connected information across an entity's general purpose financial reports, particularly between an entity's financial statements and its sustainability-related financial disclosures prepared, for example, applying IFRS sustainability disclosure standards. Secondly, the staff designed fact patterns that are compatible with the requirements in IFRS sustainability disclosure standards, but they aren't limited to circumstances in which an entity applies those particular standards. And finally, this project exemplifies connectivity between the staff, as we are fortunate to have ISSB technical staff supporting us on this project.
Thank you both. And just to wrap up the discussion on this project, as a next step, we're planning for papers to be brought in April to get some decisions about how to proceed with these examples. And if the board decides to publish illustrative examples, we will consult with our stakeholders by publishing an exposure draft, hopefully in the third quarter of this year. So now let's turn to our second project that I mentioned, which is management commentary. I think many of you are well familiar with our project, but just to share a little bit of history, management commentary is a general purpose financial report that is required in many jurisdictions alongside a company's financial statements and its sustainability-related financial information. And it's known by different names, sometimes management commentary, sometimes MD&A or management discussion analysis, sometimes operating and financial review or strategic report. The practice statement that we currently have in place, IFRS Practice Statement 1, was issued in 2010, so 14 years ago. Linda, that's when you and I were both in high school, right?
Oh, of course. Well, not even.
Right.
And I wasn't even born.
Of course.
We're all child wonders. So since 2014, numerous jurisdictions and organizations have introduced requirements and guidelines on narrative reporting. In addition to that, information needs of the users of financial reports have evolved. So we started the Management Commentary Project back in 2017 to target the shortcomings in reporting and build on innovations in narrative reporting. So fast forward to 2021, in May, the board published an exposure draft to overhaul that management commentary practice statement from 2010 to address the gaps and to incorporate innovations in narrative reporting. The comment period ended in late 2021, and that date's really important because that's around the same time that the IFRS Foundation created the ISSB, our sister board. Fast forward again to the first half of 2022, the ISSB discussed the feedback on the management commentary exposure draft. At a very high level, our stakeholders expressed support for the project. And in particular, almost all investors stressed the importance of high quality management commentaries and agreed with the IASB's analysis of the shortcomings in practice. So where are we today? So since the exposure draft was published, the landscape has changed substantially. First, as I had mentioned, the ISSB was created in 2021, and the integrated reporting framework became part of our organization with the consolidation of the Value Reporting Foundation. So with that background, Andreas, can you elaborate on the exposure or the feedback that we received on the exposure draft and how the IASB has considered it in its plans for the project?
Yes, happy to do so. So as you already said, we received very positive feedback generally, but we also received feedback and took that quite seriously from the many responders regarding the interaction between management commentary and the work of the ISSB. Most respondents asked for connectivity between the two boards and suggested the project should be paused until the ISSB is operational and progresses its work on its first standards. So you have to bear in mind that the ISSB had an approach where they set climate first, and the highest priority of their work was really given to deliver their first standard. So there was simply no time. We've responded exactly acknowledging that, so we have paused the project. And also because the ISSB published a consultation on its agenda priorities over the next 2 years, we were asked whether to prioritize a project on integration and reporting and whether it should build on the MC project. As you will recall, in January 2024, the IASB and the ISSB met to discuss feedback on the ISSB's consultation on agenda priorities and the potential project on integration in reporting to inform each board's respective decision-making on the ISSB deciding on the priorities for its next two-year work plan and the IASB deciding on the direction in its management commentary project. Having considered the outcome of the joint meeting in January, at the March board meeting, the staff presented an overview of various alternative pathways for the management commentary project. Overall, the staff identified four broad alternatives that the IASB could consider in determining the direction of the management commentary project. And there may be combinations of the four different strands. So the first option would be to finalize the project. That would mean that we make targeted or extended enhancements based on the feedback and reporting landscape changes. The second option would be to retire the project, and that would mean that we would have to consider whether or not to rescind the 2010 IFRS Practice Statement 1 on Management Commentary. A third option may be to undertake a broader project, where we would integrate management commentary into a new project, potentially focused on reporting integration. And the fourth one would basically continue doing what we've done, so putting the project on hold. This option doesn't represent what the ISSB could do, but rather when it pertains to the timing of pursuing the above options. All of the four options align with the IASB and ISSB working together, emphasizing a joint focus on advancing connectivity and reporting. Collaboration could take various forms, such as finalizing the project as an ISSB-led initiative or initiating a formal joint project in the future. We didn't make any major decisions in March, but we expect to decide on the project direction in Q2 this year after the ISSB makes its decision about whether to prioritize in the next 2 years a project on integration and reporting. Stay tuned for the upcoming meetings for more information on choices.
Thank you, Andreas. So let's move on to our third topic today, which is power purchase agreements. This is a hot topic, and I think many of you'll recall that we have talked about it quite a bit. This is the fourth time, in fact, in our monthly podcast that we've spoken about it in the last 6 months. So we won't go extensively into the project's background, but please feel free to refer to our January and February episodes for more details. As a reminder, power purchase agreements, or PPAs, are long-term contracts between electricity generators and customers, increasingly focused on renewable sources of energy, such as those coming from water or solar. These agreements provide stable, fixed prices for renewable energy over 5 to 30 years. And PPAs can broadly be grouped into physical PPAs and virtual PPAs. Under a physical PPA, you might recall a purchaser has a contractual obligation to gross settle the volume of electricity delivered under the contract. In contrast, a virtual PPA is a contract for the settlement of the difference between the spot price and the contractually specified price without any obligation to take delivery of energy. So the accounting issue that we're dealing with here is under IFRS 9. For physical PPAs, there's a question about the application of the own use exception in determining whether a company has derivatives. And with respect to the PPAs in general, there are questions around the application of hedge accounting requirements for these agreements. So ultimately, what we're trying to do here is make sure that investors get useful information that reflects the underlying economics of what companies are trying to do. And this project, you might recall from previous episodes, is moving quite quickly because stakeholders have told us that it is quite time sensitive. So Linda, can you tell us what happened in March?
Happy to do so, because next to connectivity, IFRS 9 is one of my favorite projects.
Wow.
I know. We discussed and made decisions in the following areas. First, we defined the scope of the proposed amendments for both the own use and hedge accounting requirements. Next, we agreed on how to apply the own use requirements to contracts within the scope of the proposed amendments. We also made decisions on the proposed amendments to the hedge accounting requirements using PPAs as hedging instruments. And lastly, we decided on the proposed disclosure and transition requirements for both the own use and hedge accounting requirements. The ISB accepted the staff's proposed amendments to IFRS 9, intending to initiate the exposure draft balloting process as well. The exposure draft is expected to be published for the public comments in May of 2024. And recognizing the urgency of the matter, the board has decided for a shortened comment period for the exposure draft. Instead of the usual 120 days, the comment period will be 90 days, which means your feedback will be accepted until some point in August of 2024. The final amendments are anticipated to be published by the end of 2024, available for application as soon as possible after finalization.
Thanks, Linda. And so with that, we have covered the projects that we wanted to highlight in this episode. If you are interested in learning more about all the other projects that we discussed at the March meeting, we encourage you to visit our website. You'll find detailed information, including project summaries and updates. So before we wrap up, we have some really exciting news about our exposure draft on our project Business Combinations, Disclosures, Goodwill, and Impairment. We recently published last week this exposure draft. So Andreas, can you tell us more?
Well, a truly exciting milestone, as you said, couldn't agree more. So the exposure draft presents a package of proposals aimed at enhancing the information companies provide to investors about acquisitions. And the proposals respond to stakeholders' feedback that we've heard that reporting on acquisitions can be challenging for both investors and companies, but for different reasons, obviously. To address these concerns, the ISB is proposing amendments to IFRS 3, the standard for business combinations. And under the amendments, companies would be required to report the objectives and related performance targets of their most important acquisitions. They would also need to disclose whether these objectives and targets are met in subsequent years. However, companies would not be required to disclose information that could compromise their acquisition objectives. Our aim with these proposals is to strike a balance, and we want to ensure that companies provide investors with enhanced information about acquisitions while also taking into account the risks and costs to companies. The ISB is now inviting feedback on these proposals.
Thank you, Andreas. So just as a reminder, the comment period for this exposure draft closes on the 15th of July, 2024. So please be sure to send us your feedback. We would be very interested in hearing it. You will find the exposure draft and other supporting materials on our website. And please be sure to follow our social media channels, where you will also find more information that we're sharing on this project. And that's it for this episode. Thank you for joining us on this month's IASB podcast, and we hope you found this discussion informative. If you enjoyed the podcast, we encourage you to subscribe, share, and rate us on your preferred podcast platform. And we look forward to having you back at next month's episode.